The following podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network is
provided by Vision Automotive.
Hello, everybody. We are back again for another episode of the latest Moving the Needle podcast. I am Pastor Sebrin O. Johnson from Charter Champions, and I have with me
Dr. Paul Miller, and we're doing another episode of Moving the Needle.
Great to have you. I'm the Alpha, he's the Omega. You know what works best for you. So listen, we're grateful that we have a wonderful guest here, and we're going to wrestle with our what, our so what, and the now what. The what is, why do schools fail? So what? What does that mean to us? What do we have to do about this? What are the possible solutions? And then the now what? Now that our guest has educated us, what are we going to do to move this needle? Will you do it, Doc? Will you go ahead and introduce us?
Yep. So we have the one and only. We have the great, the turnaround specialist. Yeah. This brother is all over the world trying to turn schools around.
Yeah.
Not just trying. He's doing. He's making a difference. He made a difference in his home of in the Buffalo, in the B-low. Now he is doing it here for Rochester, for all places. He's here to talk to you all. He's here to talk to us. I have none other than Dr. Mark Abraham.
Thank you, good brother. Thank you. Doc, can you travel with me when I go to places
and give me that?
Can you give me that intro everywhere I go?
You got a check with it? You know, the good doctor don't do too much for free nowadays. So I don't do free no more. I don't got to do free no more.
You know, we can work out the check later, but you know what I'm saying? Let me just get the intro.
I don't put my time in.
I'm going to just record this intro. I'm going to just take this and just put this on every time I go out. This is just going to play your voice. You ain't got no copyright on this, brother.
That's all right, man. You know, I always like to help a brother out. But the check must reflect.
CTC, cut the check.
Dr. Abraham, man, we're so grateful that you're here with us today. Can you give us a little bit about your background? Also, a little bit about your new book, What Success Looked Like.
So I was a, and just for anybody who's listening, man, I've been in this education game for a long time. You know, I started off as a one-on-one mentor for kids in the community in Buffalo, New York. I went from that to be a caseworker for the PENS diversion program, if anybody knows what that is. And then I became a school counselor at a few schools. And then after becoming a school counselor, I became a dean of students. And then I became an assistant principal and then a principal who was noted for taking a graduation rate for 60% to 87% and 93% for black males. My school was noted as a turnaround school. Which led me to go up and down the state of New York showing educators on how to put the right systems in place to move the needle for all students, but primarily for black and brown children because there's such a huge graduation gap between black males and the other populations that are within the school. I've written a couple books now. I've published internationally published book with Roman and Littlefield. I've written over 8 or 9 nationally published articles in the largest secondary principal magazine in the country. And currently I am working in all over the country from Anchorage, Alaska, all the way down to New York City and Long Island and everywhere in between, giving principals the right strategies to move the needle. And I'm proud to say that every school that I've worked in, I have not worked in a school yet that has not moved the graduation rate, has not moved literacy rates, and have not moved the numbers for their kids. So the system works.
Wow. So look, here's what I'm wondering. We know the statistics and we know the barriers when it comes to crime, when it comes to poverty, when it comes to mental health issues, all those things outside the school that affects our kids. Talk to me a little bit. When you talk about the dangers inside the school walls, what's the biggest danger or roadblock to school success? Is it bad boards, bad teachers, bad leaders, bad curriculum? What would be the worst?
I think
or bad behind kids. What is it? Come on.
I think anything bad needs to be corrected. Mm-hmm. And so if you're asking me like what's the worst of the bad, that you know, so if you had a good principal and bad teacher and bad instruction, bad kids, bad thing, you're still gonna have a bad product, right? And so and if we hit anybody with a broad stroke like bad, then you know, I think people kind of go on a continuum. Mm-hmm. I, you know, the educators that I've met they weren't bad. They just didn't have the skill.
Okay.
So it wasn't a bad, like, they, so when we, because when I hear bad, I hear somebody who is, like, just horrible at what they do or whatever the case may be. Most educators who call me in, even though they're producing negative results, they are not bad as educators. Does that make sense?
It does, but what about, let's change the word bad. What if it's, whether we're talking an educator or a school leader, what have you, a school board, what if they don't see or don't believe in their heart of heart that every single kid can learn?
Yes, I think the appropriate question is, what is the biggest barrier for student achievement?
Okay.
Right? And so that's so, is it the board that's the biggest barrier? Is it the principal that's the biggest barrier? And so on and so on. Because all of them are working they're working interchangeably with one another. I think that when we have curriculum, when we, you know, we talk about the people down south who are talking about critical race theory and attempting to remove or attempting to become a barrier at the government perspective of not allowing black children to see, black and brown children to see themselves in the curriculum. That's a huge barrier. Like, if we took a selfie right now, us three, and we all posed for the picture and we all smiled, they said cheese and we smile and we all threw up the peace sign, the first person you're going to look at when that picture gets developed is who? If me, you, and him take a picture right now, when the picture comes out on Facebook, who you looking for first?
You looking at me because I'm prettier.
No, you personally, Pastor. Who you going to look for?
They going to look for me.
If I'm looking, I'm trying to figure out the question. But if we're looking at
If all of us take a picture right now, right. Me, you, and Dr. Biller,
see,
who you looking for?
I'm suited up.
Yeah, but who you looking for in the picture?
You tell me who am I looking for?
You looking for yourself. The first person you're going to... No. We all took a picture. They take a picture. The first person in the picture that you're going to be looking for is you.
Oh,
right?
Hypothetical. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, so
okay.
So what happens is if kids, black children, are removed from the curriculum, the question is why? If me and you knew we took a picture together and I put it on Facebook and you are deleted for some reason, mm-hmm. You're going to say, why am I deleted? What happened? So when we talk about places like Florida and the South that are saying, hey, we are going to delete the presence of black and brown people inside of the curriculum. There's no books that talk about them. There's no historical facts that talk about them or see them in a positive light. That's a barrier. So then if you have a principal, a teacher who doesn't believe in the kids and now are producing subpar results, that's a barrier. If you have a principal who does not have the intestinal fortitude or the backbone to hold people accountable, that's a barrier. If you got a board that's mingling into positions that have got nothing to do with them, again, superintendent's a barrier. But if you talk about the singular individual who can make the biggest difference, in my estimation, is the principal. I think the school administration has a big role in moving the needle for the whole entire school that they oversee. But that doesn't mean it's going to be easy if all of those other entities are struggling.
So it's not to diminish the impact of any of the other areas. But if you're going in as a turnaround specialist,
right,
you're going to look first at leadership,
right,
to make sure that that's lined. But it doesn't diminish the importance of the other.
Exactly.
Got you. I got you.
But you know, if I recall your story, my brother, that Buffalo wasn't feeling you, and they weren't feeling you, and I think that's important to say. Because they weren't feeling you, and I'd like you to share why they weren't feeling you, and then what did you have to do to still get results? Because they weren't, and this is a story that often happens, and talk about it a little bit.
So I won't say, because I get a lot of love in Buffalo, so I won't say Buffalo wasn't feeling me. I would say that I was in, so let me tell you the story, and then you can point out what the issues were, right? My principal was a principal who was a veteran principal who was my mentor, who was there for 30 years or so, and she was the union president. The superintendent came in at the time and put her on administrative leave. Her being put on administrative leave put me in the position of principal. Now, the superintendent wanted me to be there. The union, my union, said, well, hey, man, listen, you're not the next in line. There's other people who have more seniority over you that need to be the next in line. But I said, well, I'm not going to be in opposition with my superintendent. You guys just go fight it out. Well, in the union world, that was like me going against the union. So once you go against the union, now you're in a position where you're in opposition with the unions. Mine, the principals union and the teachers union, they work together. For people who think they don't, you're confused. Now, they might have beef at times, but they do work together. So that is what created that issue that I had to deal with, because you got both unions and no union protection for me. So I was in the union paying union dues, but no protection from the union, because now the union said he was a turncoat, right? And so now they're throwing out narratives and throwing out narratives and throwing out narratives to try to get me off my square. And so what happened was, I was able, because I understand systems. I understand unions and I understand systems. I'm not a novice. I understood what was going on. I didn't like it. It didn't feel good. But when you're a turnaround person, you understand that you're going to go into hostile environments and actually turn the tide. And the systems that I put in to track data, to hold teachers accountable, to hold students accountable, to engage parents, it all worked together so that we got a result of moving the needle. One thing I will say I was fortunate enough was that my superintendent, at the time, he had my back. He didn't want me to fail because he was the one that put me there, right? And so as a principal, it's very difficult if you have, if you're fighting multiple battles. But you know, so that's kind of my story, my situation.
Got you. So, you know, so now you did it. So how did you get them to buy into it? Because you had some stellar results. You went and you went from, I think, somewhere around a 60-something percent graduation rate to an 87%, then 93% for black males. Like, that's phenomenal in the traditional public school world, where you had to fight against unions, you had to fight against other political powers, but you were able to do that. So, you know, what did your success look like?
So you guys talked about the what, the how, and where else are we going? You said that, Pastor.
Right, the what, the so what, the no what, the now what.
And so I knew what I wanted to do. The how was a bit ambiguous at the time as a novice turn. Like I knew I understood it, but actually putting it in practice the first time, actually taking it to practice. And the what caught the buy-in for my teachers was the why.
Mm.
So we can have the how and the what, but the question is the why. And for me, when I explained to my staff my why, what actually drove me every day to come here and do the work that I do, they started to tap into their own why. Before you got in a union, before you got the paycheck, before you got the pension, why did you want to become a teacher? Why did you want to become an educator? Remember that. And if you remember that and I remove the distractions away from you, you can do the work and really help the kids that you say that you want to help. Because at the end of the day, you don't have to be here. You are a free moral agent. You can go to any school in the world. You don't have to work for me under my leadership. And I would say my retention rate was very high. Even though they said, oh, he had a vote of no confidence, teachers did not leave me. They stayed with me and they rocked with me because they knew that I had the best interest of the kids and the teachers at heart. So to get the buy-in started with helping people understand why you got into this work. And then once you tapped into their why and you put systems in place to make their job easier, then they actually said, okay, we can rock with this, right? And we can not be distracted by the distractions. But it's the same thing I do when I'm with principals around the country. Like, why did you get in this work? Now that you understand your why, because your why is going to push you past, right? Like, I'm here as a man who says I love black children and I want to see black children be successful. It does not negate that I don't love white children or Latino children or whoever the case may be. I love all children, but my fidelity is to the children that look like me because of my experience. My experience of my friends who were killed, my experience of my friends who were jailed, my experience to say, hey, they didn't get a high school diploma, so now they're in a bad situation. And my experience of having to go to funerals of parents and having to hug mothers that their kid died and got killed at 19. And the same commonality is no education, no hope, and finding themselves in nefarious behaviors.
I gotta ask you, Dr. Abraham, we gotta dig a little deeper right there. Because I'm looking at this and I hear all the time that leaders aren't made. That you, and I think you mentioned this offline, you have to have the intestinal fortitude You have to have something deep down in your belly. I'm cleaning that up. You have to have something. You have to have something deep down in your belly that allows you to withstand what comes at you, especially in this area. Now, I've said it over and over again. I'm not an educator. My background before my calling was in high-tech startups. And I recall a time, and I've shared this story, in Manhattan where I got a position and we were about to go public. And my job was to oversee some of the IT stuff and some of the operations. They got us there. And the day they hired this young 20-something-year-old black brother, over 60 people walked out and quit that day.
Mm.
They quit their job, and we were going to go public in a matter of a couple months.
Mm.
And they left rather than work for me.
Mm.
And that was so deflating.
Mm.
Because at the time, you think, I worked hard to get to this position.
Mm-hmm.
And I get here, and they walk out on me, almost trying to invalidate who I am.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened with you, here you are. You're recommended for this position. And now it looks like some unions may be against you, other things. Tell me a little bit. What do you have deep inside that says, no, that's not going to turn me around. I'm going to stay here and do this.
Yeah, that's a great question. I ain't a pastor or preacher, but I do love God and I love people, right? And so when I got that vote of no confidence, they used to put me in the news so much, I thought I was running for local government, man. Mm. And so when I got that vote of no confidence and they said, you know, the guy said 60% of the people, you know, felt like I couldn't do the job. It was like a month into the job, right? I went to God in prayer and I asked God, I said, Lord, what am I doing wrong or where am I missing it that's causing me to have this negative things happen? And what I heard was, why is it that you think you're doing something wrong? You could be doing something right.
Wow. Yeah.
So then that's what, once I heard that,
yeah,
it changed me. Because yeah, it was like, oh, it's on there.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
whatever it is that comes after that, yeah, as long as I know that God put me here and he got my back, everything right, else is inconsequential.
See, Dr. Miller, so the enemy don't rob poor people.
Hey, man, I always put God first, my brother. So putting God first, yeah, I think is always going to be one of the answers. And I hear you saying once you realize that you were doing exactly what he wanted you to do, you weren't afraid anymore. There wasn't nothing to be afraid of. But you know, when you're walking around and you're working with these schools throughout the country and you're trying to help them turn around, where do you start with these leaders? Because not all of them believe in God. Not all of them believe that or what happens when they might have certain skills but they don't have the right attributes?
Yeah.
What happens when they have attributes but don't have the skills? Where do you start?
Yeah, so you know, and let me say this. I don't go into a school with a Bible. I go into school with the turnaround Bible. And so it's not about your belief in God. I mean, that's just your personal thing, whatever it is that drives you, right? And that's personal for you, right? For me, where I start in is where I always start. I start with the data. Like, I don't even get into people's bias when I do turnaround because I only got 10 months. Like, I get one contract. I got 10 months to turn your school around. I really don't have time to deal with your implicit bias. I don't have time to deal with your racism. I don't have time to do it anything. We look at the numbers. What does the data tell you about your school? There's two data sets that you're looking at, or two type of data sets. You're looking at the quantitative data, the numbers, and you're looking at the qualitative data, the voices of the people. You have to figure out where you are. And once we figure out where we are, it's like a diet. It's like anything else. You are overweight. That's what the doctor says. Now, what do we have to do to get you to lose 5 pounds? I'm not looking for you to lose 20 pounds in a year, and I'm not looking to move a graduation rate 20 points in a school year. Why? Because if you move a graduation rate from 40% to 80% in 1 year, you are going to be in the funny papers. You're going to get in trouble because the state's going to say, how does this happen? It's not realistic. I'm looking to take you from 40% to 45%, compounding 45% to 55%, and so on and so on. So when I go into a school, every one of my principals, I'm going to be in Michigan next week. I sit down with them and say, let's pull your data and let's have a conversation about what the numbers are telling you about your organization. We don't just pull it for 1 year. We pull it for the last 3 years. LeBron James has averaged over 30 points a season. If you're a betting man, you'll be a fool to bet that he won't get 30 points this season. His data tells you for the last 20-something years, more than likely, he's going to get 30 points a game. So what you have to do is say, how do I get LeBron James from 30 points to 35 points to 36 points? It seems like a easy thing, but that's how you turn the school around, step by step.
Now, I've been in a few areas in the country, and something seems to happen over and over again.
Can I say something? Does that make sense to you?
No, absolutely.
Okay,
no,
I just want to make sure.
I'm with you. No, you're starting with the data, starting with the numbers, and similarly when I work with clients. But I will argue, you know, and I think, you know, we want to set realistic and implement goals. But, you know, pushing them for doubling it, first pushing them to triple it, because a lot of times they can if they put the right systems in place. But that's the big hiccup, is whether they're going to put the systems in place. Are they going to follow? And one of my difficulties is I get clients who you work with them and you put certain things in place and then they don't follow it.
They don't hold it.
And that's part of the one of the struggles too when you were dealing with people and with the school turnaround work.
Yeah. So the piece, you know, and Pastor, you go ahead. But we're working with two things, Doc. We're working with people's skill and we're working with people's will. Right. And so they've earned a degree. Right. And I go into the room with an idea that these people are capable of doing the work. Right. I lead with the premise that the principals who hire me are capable. They had the wherewithal to want to pick up the phone and hit me up. Right. I'm not advertising. Right. And so I go in there with the premise that you can do it. You're capable of doing it. Do you want to do it? You call me. So that's a yes. Are you willing to go through the fire and the persecution to get to the other side? That's the question. Are you willing to go to the places where it gets uncomfortable, it gets difficult, and still grit your teeth and hold the system in place? That's the question that we're asking.
I agree with that.
And that's where people kind of falter, right? But when you have a coach, I'm coaching you on systems, but I'm also coaching you on your heart. So when you Google me and you say, golly, some people hate you, some people love you, right? I'm saying, I think the best thing that happened to me, Pastor, was that I got that vote of no confidence. The reason why it's the best thing that happened when people get online and they get on TV and lie about me and do all this other stuff, that's so good. Why? Because it removes the bite.
Yeah.
It removes the fear. You already lied on me. You already talked about me. You already said this. So now what I got to be afraid of? I could just go do the work freely. I'm not concerned about my reputation. I'm concerned about the results.
So when they call you, they know who they're getting.
Exactly. So there is no legend of man. There is no like, I don't really know. Nah, baby, Google me before you. I had a person in Arizona call me and say, oh man, we got all this stuff that came out. I said, do you want me to come or not? Is it you want me to come or you don't want me to come? Google me, baby. But you get the real authentic Dr. Abraham every time I step in. I don't go in one city and say one thing and go to another city and say another thing. Nah, when I come in, I'm going to say kids can learn. They deserve a quality education. Here's the system, how you put it in place, and let's get these results. Because it's possible, and I done it every single city I've been in.
So, okay. That takes me to my next question. So,
Pastor was about to say something.
I'm sorry, you got a question?
Go ahead.
Because this one is based off of what you just said, right? So, if public schools, let's talk about Rochester. We're in Rochester, y'all. So Rochester's been failing for, 20 years or more? The district has not been doing well. And there's even some charters that aren't doing well. So if you were handed the keys to say, hey, turn this around and come in here and turn it around, where would you start? What would it look like? So if you were going to come in and try to fix Rochester.
You know, we talking Rochester is the third, fourth largest urban school district in the state of New York.
It's 646 out of 646 of the worst school districts in the state and one of the worst in the country.
Yeah, so the question is, am I called to turn it around as a superintendent? That's not my calling. If I'm called to turn it around as a principal, or am I called to turn it around as a consultant? As a principal, you got one school. You can will your school into success. You know that, Doc. I mean, you know, if you have a conversation and tell the superintendent, listen, there's some things, some barriers that need to be removed, but I'm going to move this building, right? As a consultant, it's the same thing. Like, it doesn't matter to me that you've been failing for a long time. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. I know more than likely the reason why you are failing is because you don't have the right systems in place, right? I know that you're failing because you're not looking at your data. I know that you're failing because you're distracted by the distractions. I know that you're failing because you are not holding people accountable. I know that you're failing because you are not operating in a sense of love, meaning high expectation and getting results. Those are the reasons why you're failing. Right. And so that fear that's driving you is causing you to fail. So where do I start in Rochester? Man, this thing, my system worked like peanut butter and jelly. It worked every time, man. It worked like Novocaine. Just give it some time.
But see, what you said was it starts with the principal, starts with the leadership, right?
Right.
And so you can turn that around. And that's the argument that we've been making on here is that, so one of the things that we've proposed is to give us the lowest failing school, give us 10 failing schools, whatever you want to give us. We can in the district. We can turn them around, and we can work to turn them around. So one of the examples is by building school autonomy. So if that principal, if it starts and stops with the principal, and that principal is going to be the true leader of this building, then give them the autonomy to do so. Give them their own budget, remove the bureaucracy, remove the politics, give them the opportunity, expand, open the contracts, whatever you got to do, and now push for the changes that are necessary and empower this leader to do so, but now give them the skills and tools to do it.
Yeah, brother, but you got to ask yourself a question, man. Let's just keep it real for a moment. Well, I've been keeping it real the whole time, but let's just keep it real. Let's just keep it real about your current situation.
Yeah.
Why? See, you got to ask the questions. Why is Rochester failing for so long? What? Who stands to benefit from the school failing for so long? Who are the people that are actually? So, who are the people who are actually getting gain from them failing? Right, like, why are we in this position? So, so unless you're willing to discover, you know, and the powers that be are willing to discover why the school is failing, who is benefiting from the school that's failing? Because if there was no benefit to nobody that this school has been failing for so long, it wouldn't be failing so long. We can't just have this thought process that the reason why the school's failing is because of the kids in the community because they're so bad. No. This system has been failing for a long period of time. If there was no benefit to nobody for the school to be failing, it wouldn't be failing. Because what we would do is say, you know what, this is crazy. We're going to break the district down and we're going to make a smaller district. We're going to say, hey, we're going to break Rochester up and we're going to make it a east side Rochester, a west side Rochester, a north side Rochester. We're going to get superintendents over each one of them. There's going to be accountability for every student succeeds act. We're going to break this bigger thing down and make it smaller. And we're going to attack this and we're going to give them the resources they need so they'd be successful. If there was a benefit, the question is, why is there no benefit added for the community?
So we've been trying to answer that question, and we've been talking about this question for a long time. And the answer that we have is it's the adults, it's the politics and the money. And adults are doing what's best for them and not what's best for our kids in this community. And so they don't want it's the bureaucracy, it's the politics. That's what's in the way. That's what we're trying to remove. We want to remove that so that we can do exactly what you're talking about. We can get into smaller chunks, and then we can change the game, change the systems, and honestly create this autonomous model that we could do something differently in.
So let me jump in there because, and I'm not sure if I'm with you all on how small things have to be. I'm not sure. Charter schools in Rochester right now, if we were a sector, we would be the third largest district. If we were a district, we'd be the third largest district in Rochester with going on 9,000 kids. So there's that, but we do operate autonomously. But I want to try to push this up a little bit. You were trying to indicate, Dr. Abraham, that, listen, your deal is I'm turning around building by building.
Right.
And so we're going to look at that. Rochester, in the district anyways, we have a number of buildings that are at the bottom of the state. Western New York, not so great when it comes to the state. New York State itself, not so good when you compare it to the rest of the country.
Right.
And I was going to say earlier that in talking to individuals in different places in the country, if you're in Colorado, if you're in Texas, if you're in Mississippi, they all look at New York State Education Department.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that we're stale, we are antiquated, that we don't embrace new models that would make it easier for individuals like yourself to come in and do effective work. Do you buy into that, or you say not really?
Again, I would say not really. I mean, I'm in a lot of different states, in a lot of different cities around the country. So, you know, New York State, I won't say that they're stale. I think they just make it difficult to get in. But I don't think they're not trying to buy in. But there's a lot. So when you're moving big organizations in big districts, things have to – it's not like a speedboat where you can just make a little adjustment and you're going. These are big districts. You know, New York City is one of the largest school districts in the country. They got over 1 million kids there, right? And so you don't just – move it that quickly.
Turn the big boat.
Yeah, you gotta move. So when we even with what Dr. Austin's doing and Nell's doing over there with the MBK program, My Brother's Keeper program, it's only one in the country, and it's in New York State, right? So I think New York State is cutting edge with some of the things that they're trying to do. But we all know in the research perspective that, you know, there's a gap between research and practice. Right, there's a huge disparity between what we know works in research and then what actually happens. But it happens like that because there's a lot of red tape educators have to go into. And then you got to also consider we have one of the strongest unions in the country. Again, and then we got the Regents exams. We got a lot of things that kind of act as barriers that people have to maneuver. And I the Department of Education, the work that they're trying to do, because I talk to a lot of those people. They're trying to do good work, right? But there's red tape that they're going into. So I won't say we're stale and antiquated. I just say there's a lot of different barriers that we got to contest with unions and things like that. Nothing wrong with unions. I love unions, but there's things that you have to.
It's political, y'all.
There's things
trying to keep the money flowing, y'all.
There's things that you have to contest with when you're actually trying to move systems.
Hey, you know, we appreciate you for coming on today. As we kind of near and wrap up, you know, I think we could continue this dialogue for a while, man. We appreciate Dr. Mark Abraham coming on and what success looks like. Check this brother out, man. Google him.
Yeah.
Like he said, check him out. If you need help with support, you know, he's available. His company is one of the fastest growing consulting companies in the country, and he's making moves. So check this brother out. And, you know, just as some last minute thoughts here on Moving the Needle. Again, what I heard today is a lot of the reason why our schools are failing is because of politics and money. It's adult stuff. It's not kid stuff. It's adult. And even this brother just answered with, you know, they're trying to do the work, but they're trying to do it and maneuver around politics and money. Everything is about politics and money instead of doing what's best for kids. If people stop worrying about themselves and do what's right for kids and start fighting for kids to be able to read and write, so we don't have to build another prison for our young black men because they can read and write and be successful. That's what they really need to be focused on. We need to be focused on our kids and doing things the right way. And as adults, removing our biases and putting our kids first. So we're here on Moving Needle to put our kids first and to put our educational systems first that make sure that we're doing the work here, y'all. And so we just want to say thank y'all for listening. And we appreciate y'all to continue listening and Moving the Needle, because we're going to keep pushing until we get somebody to listen that wants to put our kids first. So that's our latest episode on Moving the Needle.
Let's move the needle, y'all.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network.
Provided by Vision Automotive.